I'm going to begin by updating some of the information about the death of Joseph Daniel Casolaro from Virginia McCullough, the investigator and reporter who has been speaking with us about that during the past 2 weeks. After getting an update on the Joseph Daniel Casolaro investigation and the other activities that Virginia has been researching, I'm going to read a few stories by way of adding to Radio Free America 36, the destabilization of the USSR. The course of events in that unfortunate part of the world has become clear at this juncture. So I'm going to update and add a few more articles into the record vis-a-vis what's going on in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. Anyway, Virginia, welcome back to the KFJC airwaves, albeit we were having our share of difficulties here. In any event, what has transpired with the Joseph Daniel Casolaro case or your other investigations in the week since we last spoke to you?
Well, apparently Daniel was meeting with a gentleman by the name of Alan David Sandorf.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, perhaps as long as the last 6 months of 1990. He had been put in touch with Alan David Sandorf, who was in a civilian employee of the National Security Agency.
Okay.
And worked at Vince Hill, Virginia, which is a top-secret base involved in signal processing, satellite communication, tracking foreign nations from space.
Right. We touched on him towards the end of the phone call last week in our last conversation.
Right. And we've since determined that that apparently Michael Barakanashuto and Daniel were both interviewed and questioned by military police and airport authorities in late January or the early part of February, according to Michael. Michael indicated that he had put Alan David Sandorf in touch with Danny Casolaro.
And this is Mike Barakanashuto.
That's right.
Right.
That he had known that Michael had known Alan David Sandorf for some 13 years and had met him as part of the intelligence community. I spoke with the Sandorf family, and they indicated that their son had been in the intelligence arena for since right out of high school.
Okay.
That he was very brilliant, that he was very protective about his work, that he did not discuss it with them. Michael, on the other hand, indicated that I should look into the three women who were found in murdered at the airport or dumped at the airport in that same time frame as Mr. Sandorf's body.
Now, fill us in on the women. We have not heard about the women.
The only thing currently I know about them, Dave, is that they were found, according to the Washington Times and the press release by the Washington National Airport authorities, their bodies located at Washington National. Now, from the authorities, that's the only information available, but Michael Barakanashuto indicates to me that when he and Danny were interviewed after Mr. Sandorf's death, that the authorities indicated to them these women had been killed in the same fashion as Alan David Sandorf. In other words, they had been beaten to death or bludgeoned to death with blunt objects. And I asked Michael if he knew these women or had put any women in touch with Danny, and he indicated no. He was of the opinion that perhaps these were what they call cluster killings, or killings that are done in order to make it look like a serial killer is on the rampage rather than an individual selection of somebody to murder.
So in other words, basically they might have been killed, at least according to Mike's theory, in order to camouflage the real, sadly, the deliberate assassination of David Alan Sandorf.
Yes, that's correct.
Is it David Alan or Alan David?
Alan David.
Alan David Sandorf.
Yes. His family is still reeling from the shock. In talking with their family, his family, they indicate that his car was seized by the authorities, military police, apparently in Department of the Defense. And also his apartment was entered and his Atari computer, his typewriter, his paperwork gone through. And all of that material, personal effects, have not been returned to the family, and they asked for them fairly recently, and they were told that they must undergo additional testing.
Now, any idea as to why Alan David Sandorf was killed? What information was it that he had that the authorities did not want out?
Well, Michael Reconocido indicated that he was turning documents over to Danny Casolaro to document and to verify what Michael Reconocido had alleged before the House Judiciary, that he had documentation that he was willing to part with, and that documentation was not found either at Danny's home or at the site of the murder or in his car.
Now, was this pertinent to the Inslaw case and the Cabazon Indian operation with Wackenhut?
It would appear to me that, and I haven't specifically asked Michael, I don't think it would have much to do with the Cabazon Indian Reservation, but I do believe that it would back up the Ari Ben Menashe statement about what Israel was using the PROMIS software for, which was signal processing in part.
Okay.
And because of the line of work that Mr. Sandorf was in, I believe that probably is the documentation that he was supplying. In other words, PROMIS software documentation.
Okay. Now, one question I have, there was an engineer named William Turner who had met with Danny Casolaro. It's my understanding that he's experiencing some irregularities at the moment as well.
Yes, with Bill Turner, there was a move afoot because he had been blacklisted from Hughes Aircraft and supposedly overpaid by the Veterans Administration to persecute him through the Justice Department, an attorney, U.S. attorney, and assistant U.S. attorney. And he has a hearing upcoming on September the 13th, which he is very fearful of. He is afraid they will put him in jail. In the meantime, he's trying to find a safe refuge for his wife and their 13-year-old daughter.
And what he was one of Danny Casolaro's informants as well, was he not?
That's correct. And he was turning over to Danny over a period of some 14 months documentation about irregularities and taxpayer fraud involving Hughes Aircraft.
How did that pertain, those particular documents pertain to the Octopus, or did they?
Well, one of the things that Michael urged Danny Casolaro to look into was the irregularities in the weapons industry, the switching of software to render certain weapons not state-of-the-art.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, what it would amount to is fixing or stacking a deck of cards. If you go to war and you sell weapons to a nation, or you have a third party sell weapons to a nation that you'll go to war with, and then you downgrade the war weapons before they leave to go to the third nation, which in turn conveys them to your enemy, you are in essence fixing the war.
Oh, so in other words, these were weapons to be sold to future adversaries?
In part, yes.
Okay. Any idea about which countries that might have been involved?
Well, I know that Iran was livid over the missiles that came to them via Israel because they were supposed to be new and updated weapons. This was the late summer of 1985. And, in fact, I can give you that these missiles were sent new to Israel, that entities that are coming forth now apparently downgraded the used weapons that Israel already had, downgraded the fire control mechanisms and the guidance mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And then those missiles were loaded onto a 707 airplane flown over Belgium airspace through a Belgium carrier and financed by a Swiss bank. And then when they arrived in Iran, who thought they were getting new missiles, was livid. And there is much speculation that the anger might have resulted in the Gander crash over Newfoundland.
I was wondering about that. There has been speculation. In particular, there's an article from Details Magazine from 1990, that an article by Joe Connison, who normally writes for the Village Voice. The article was called Crash, Burn, and Cover-Up, about the Gander crash, and it's speculated that the crash might very well have resulted from a terrorist incident that was generated by the Iranians over their anger concerning subpar weapons deliveries, and the TOW missiles in particular.
I'm to discuss this further with the people within the Gander family community within the coming week, Dave. And I wanted to just say one thing, that I was on a local radio station that only had a 15-minute format, and it's so frustrating to talk about these things when someone is telling you that they only want a portion of the pie, they only want a portion of the truth brought out. And so I appreciate the opportunity to again update you.
Now, but was this KPFA by any chance?
Yes, it was.
I did hear that interview. Now, there was a limitation of time. Did the interviewer, by the way, for the benefit of listeners, it was a fellow named Dennis Bernstein. He indicated to you, I did not remember this from on air, did he indicate that he was only interested in certain parts of the story and did not want to cover others?
Yes, he indicated that he wanted to, well, first he indicated that it is an evolved and complicated story, and it is indeed.
Sure.
But on the other hand, he wanted to center on what I guess in the media you call a local hook, which I certainly want explored, and that's the murder of Dexter Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
And it will, I think, eventually fit like a knitted sweater together with this. But right now, to place Danny Casalero's death side by side with that of Dexter Jacobson in a 15-minute segment makes your credibility come into doubt.
Well, and of course, we have gone over the material in an hour and a half 2 weeks ago, and then last week we spent about another 45 minutes, and pretty much it took pretty much that whole 2 hour and a quarter time frame to cover the details adequately, and indeed I had to fill in certain things concerning the drug tug case and Charles Duck from some of the investigative series from Harry Martin's Napa Sentinel that I have been accessing for the last couple of years, so I could certainly see that trying to squeeze that much information into 15 minutes would be very frustrating.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Harry, because my fax machine came alive toward the latter part of last week. And the note read, "No, I'm not in hiding. I'm in the office," and it was Harry.
Uh-huh.
So I'm real happy to have Harry back online, because that's the only way the American public is going to know the truth, is through their free newspapers or their alternative media, as it's called.
And Harry right now, in my opinion, is doing the best work of anybody operating in the periodical medium in this country, even though he has very limited resources. Some of the intersecting cases that we have talked about over the last couple of years, the drug tug case involving Charles Duck, among others, the CIA connections to the savings and loan scandal, the Inslaw case, the October surprise case, the murder of Dexter Jacobson, all of these have been covered in Harry Martin's various series, and they all intersect, as well as the Jinx case, BBRDW, and it's very refreshing to see someone like Harry who's willing to tackle these cases, even though he's taken a lot of flack for some of them, too. And I once again want to repeat for the benefit of listeners, if they have not gotten a hold of some of Harry's press packets or some of the taped material, which contains additional information that are not in the press packets from Archives on Audio, they should contact the Napa Sentinel, 925 Lincoln Avenue, as in Honest Abe, Napa, California, 94558, and the phone number is 707-257-6272, 707-257-NAPA, and you can fill yourselves in on some of the various investigative series Harry has done about the national security establishment. They all intersect, and it's a lengthy body of information, very complicated, but in order to understand what Joseph Daniel Casalero called the octopus and the Inslaw case and some of the intersecting tentacles, I would strongly recommend Harry's investigative series.
I want to take this opportunity to say also that there have been individuals within the established media who are doing their darndest, Harry, to push their editors and their publishers to see the light and to publish the truth. And to those individuals, there's a large credit due from the American public, because they fight an everyday battle on very tight time schedules. And they're not working for the world's largest salary. And now you see that we're beginning to reap a few of the benefits. Newsweek actually carried something and Time magazine.
This past week, Jack Anderson had a column talking about the death of Joseph Daniel Casalero. And I believe it was yesterday or the day before, I've forgotten which, but James J. Kilpatrick, of all people, actually began talking about that. And when an individual of his stripe, he's an extremely reactionary individual, and in my opinion, bears a considerable portion of responsibility for having set the table, so to speak, for many of these abuses. He's been a vocal exponent of the far right in this country for a long time. But when James J. Kilpatrick starts talking about the death of Joseph Daniel Casalero, it's an indication to me that some of the rats are leaving the ship.
Oh, I think they're leaving the ship both within the media and certainly leaving the ship politically. And to that end, I would urge Mr. Cranston, before he leaves office, to take his proper toll and expose as much as only a senator could about what is going on. His reputation and how the history will look upon him, I think, depends in large part upon the truth that he is able to tell us now.
Now, Cranston is head of the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee.
I believe so.
All righty, and his name has been in the news in connection with a number of the investigations of some of these intersecting scandals, such as October Surprise and some of the BCCI tentacles leading in the direction of Robert Gates and other investigative pathways. And again, the Octopus, for the benefit of listeners who are new to the program or did not hear the last few weeks, the Octopus was what the late Joseph Daniel Casolaro termed the intersection, or actually the entity formed by a number of intersecting scandals, such as the BCCI scandal, Iran-Contra, the October Surprise, the Inslaw case. They all intersect, and that is what Danny Casolaro referred to as the Octopus.
Back to Senator Cranston for just one moment.
Right.
Without Senator Cranston's August 8th press conference and press release, we would not know anything about the related death of reporter Anson Ng. And I want to stress again before your listening audience that this death is directly related to the death of Danny Casolaro. They were investigating the same story. They were sharing the same source. They were going after the Cabazon connection. And as I speak to you from beautiful Lake Tahoe tonight, I'm going to be meeting with Fred Alvarez's sister, Linda Streeter, who's in hiding. For the next couple of days, and we're going to be discussing what we can do to possibly do something about forcing the issue of an investigation into the Alvarez murders.
Now, for the benefit of listeners that did not hear the Inslaw case or have not heard some of the previous conversations between myself and Virginia McCullough, Fred Alvarez was a member of the Cabazon Indian tribe who objected to a joint venture between the Cabazon Indians and the Wackenhut Corporation, a private security outfit with very close connections to the national security establishment. They were trafficking weapons and apparently also the pirated Inslaw software to, or the pirated Promise software from Inslaw to various foreign governments, and the proceeds from this were being used to do a number of things, including fund the Contras in Nicaragua. Fred Alvarez objected to this and was killed for his trouble, along with a number of other members of the Cabazon tribe.
Actually, it was Fred Alvarez and two friends. They were not members of the tribe themselves, but there have been three other mysterious deaths of tribal members, both before and after Fred Alvarez's death. What is established down there at that Cabazon Reservation right now is an armed camp. The Indians have no control. The Nichols family is in total control.
And that's Dr. John Nichols, an individual that we talked about in connection with the CIA connections to the savings and loan scandal.
Yes, and John Paul Nichols, his son, who has heavy connections with the Wackenhut Corporation and is currently, I believe, in San Antonio, Texas. And that is his power. And what I'm hearing from the Cabazon tribe now, and I hope your taxpayers are listening up, because given the conditions of his parole when he was sentenced to prison, this is the senior Mr. Nichols, for contracting for the killings of certain individuals, condition of his parole was that he not participate in the Cabazon tribal control that his sons were enjoying. And now, apparently, there is a move afoot to make him a counselor to the Indians, and I believe what is behind it, according to the letters I've seen, is to justify the huge amounts of money that have continued to flow to Mr. Nichols in spite of the condition of his parole.
All righty. Now, recalling very briefly, Anson Ng, the other reporter who was murdered, and he was killed down in Guatemala, I believe, on July 29th. In our previous conversations, you mentioned that the Octopus goes back to something called the Black Rose, which was a U.S. intelligence drug-running operation from Southeast Asia, and some of the funds from that operation had been banked previously with the Nugenham Bank in Australia, also BBRDW, Bishop Baldwin, Rewald, Dillingham, and Wong, another CIA financial conduit. And you mentioned that Anson Ng had been tracing the funds from the Black Rose operation and found that some of them had the repository had been the BCCI.
That's correct. And he was also down there to interview a man who could have enabled him to enter the security networks for those funds. And the man is Jimmy Hughes. And he also was the bag man on the Alvarez murders. He delivered the money.
Now, where is Hughes now?
Hughes is in Guatemala City, I believe, at least as the last time I knew, which is you know, my information comes from Michael, and of course with Michael being in jail, it's very difficult for him to have it one-on-one with Jimmy Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
What is amazing to me, though, Dave, is these gentlemen sitting in jail have their own intelligence network, and they often know before the media or even before the guards in their jail what is transpiring on the outside.
One of the things that I am not in a position to go into any details, but one of the things which lends credibility to Gunther Rosbacher's story, and it has been alleged by some people that he is not who he claims to be. I've indicated before that I cannot state that he is the October surprise pilot that he claims to be, but I'm totally satisfied that he is a veteran intelligence officer, and one of the things he has been able to do is to tell me things that were going to happen, and then they then happened, which that carries a lot of weight in terms of a person's credibility. You have a guy sitting in prison, and he's able to accurately forecast the future. And I wish I could go into detail for the listeners, but I'm unfortunately not in a position to do that. But I do know what you're talking about in that regard.
I think what has happened is that our covert operations have come back to haunt our government, because these gentlemen at least thought that they were operating in part on behalf of their government, certainly in part, too, I would imagine, for personal profit. But in any case, when the government decided that it was becoming too public, the operations, and therefore not politically expedient, they started jailing these individuals on a variety of charges.
Mm-hmm.
And I am terribly frightened that if we don't wake up as a public and recognize that at the very basis of this is an attack upon our Bill of Rights and our right as individuals to maintain our civil liberties, we'll end up like Gunther Rosbacher or Michael Reconosciuto in jail also.
Yeah, one of the things that I cite for my audience frequently is the old saying, the old street maxim that what goes around comes around, and I think it applies in this case. If things continue to go in the direction they're going, it's not just going to be people like Michael Reconosciuto and Gunther Rosbacher in prison. As you quite correctly said, a lot of us are going to be there too.
But I'd like to touch bases, you know, along those lines with the power that these individuals have. Coming from a high-tech family of long-standing in Silicon Valley, what has been puzzling to both my husband and myself have been the so-called civilian entity that is NASA continuing to put up secret satellite after secret satellite after secret satellite based upon taxpayers' dollars funded therefrom, and then to look recently and see the amount of failures in the satellites that are going up. I would suggest to you what has happened is a reaction from the individuals working at these sites, in these companies, in the supporting companies to NASA, and they see, in effect, that they have been betrayed. This is not a peaceful exploration of space, as it was initially told to the American public. And in effect, what you have is you have signal processing stations in outer space that's perfectly capable of mapping every single resource in the world and then putting it into some type of holding pattern, be it the Forestry Department or Nature Conservancy or the Sierra Club, some type of land bank. And it's happening all over. And it's, by the way, one of Mr. Cranston's favorite pursuits is the desert build. And I was speaking with a gentleman over the weekend who was a platinum mining engineer,
mm-hmm,
who has several small claims, and he is appalled at what is going on, because they're having to deal with just two or three entities in the world, where before, as private prospectors, they would be able to go out and feel that if they struck it big, as in the American dream, that they would be rewarded for their efforts. Now they feel that they're just in one bargain with a huge banking industry or bank industry, and that no matter what they do to pursue the American dream, they're not going to benefit from it.
Now, you're saying basically, in your opinion, or perhaps you have hard information, that some of these secret satellites that are going up under NASA's auspices are actually being used to track resources here on Earth. And apparently these things are, am I correct in inferring that these are being done by the military?
I don't know if they're being done by the military, but the end result is militaristic in that they are tracking what should be the resources for each and every individual, and only certain people who have elected to play God are in a position to then control those resources. And you see it all over. You see it with the trees and the Alaskan forests. You see it with the platinum in the desert. Michael, and the reason I'm centering on the platinum is because Michael Reconosciuto has alleged that that is what he was after in the lab that was raided on the Washington-Canadian border. And
he was specifically looking into platinum resources?
Yes, and in his own handwriting, I can supply to your audience. I'll be glad to talk to anybody about it specifically. I'd love to hear from people who are experts in the field, because I have in his own handwriting the formula for the derivation for the platinum and what he was doing up there, including the receipts for the chemicals that he was using. And I've been in possession of those from almost the day he was arrested.
Now, how did this tie in, or does it tie in, with the octopus, Inslaw, et cetera?
Well, one of the things that Danny was last looking into through a reporter very skilled in this arena in Arizona was gold and platinum brokerage and the huge, unbelievably huge amounts of money that were flowing offshore from this type of a operation. And Danny had called this man just about a week before his trip to Martinsburg, and he wanted everything the man knew on gold and platinum brokerage.
Mm-hmm.
He had been placed in touch with the individual by Michael Reconosciuto.
Okay.
The octopus was, in essence, I guess, the head of the octopus could best be described as this New World Order. And I noticed, for example, up here at Tahoe, there's a lot of One World T-shirts, beautiful, beautiful designs for sale, but they're being sold for $2 or $3 a piece. And I think people are getting the message that maybe One World Order is not exactly what we really need or want in any nation. We lose our identity, we lose our freedoms. We lose the pursuit of the dream.
Well, certainly the multinational corporations, and those are, in my estimation, the dominant power entity in the world today, along with the U.S. military. The multinational corporations do not have a particularly high regard for human liberty, and they've generally been very cavalier about suppressing that liberty when it threatens their profits. So I think the long-term implications for what George Bush refers to as the New World Order basically are very grave for those people who believe in freedom.
Well, it certainly is for Danny Casolaro. I became very, very angry as I got thinking about this and the other night just before we left to come up here, and I called up the hotel where he was going to meet with his sources and where he ultimately was found dead. I asked to speak to the manager, and I asked him to come forward with the truth, because someone there at that hotel knows what happened to Danny Casolaro, and then if they do not, if Danny was able to walk into the room with someone who killed him, and the manager of the hotel then called the police, and the police embalmed the body within 2 hours and ordered the room cleaned, the hotel had to give consent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it dawned on me that perhaps one of the things we can do in defense of our freedom is to do what Martin Luther King did, you know, and that's hit him in the pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
These people know the truth, and what is happening is somebody is telling them that in the interest of national security, you will not say anything.
Or perhaps the interest of staying alive.
Or maybe it's that basic a threat. But in any case, we're in a war.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on just a moment. We're in a war, and that kind of a war is something we each have to participate in if we're going to maintain our freedoms.
Absolutely. Well, it's basically, once again, I've indicated to my audience many times over the years that what goes around comes around. And you may be reading about Joseph Daniel Casolaro today. Tomorrow somebody may be reading about you. I mean, not you, Virginia, but the audience. But I certainly hope we'll be reading about you in terms of as a journalist and not another casualty. Speaking of which, last week you read a document, a computer document giving the names of reporters who had been targeted by Wackenhut. Have there been any new developments in that vis-a-vis that list in that case?
No, and I have not discussed that much with Michael. He's been very concerned, however, about another release. And so am I, and I want to discuss that if you have just a moment.
Oh, sure. No, we have as much time as you'd like to take this evening.
Okay, there's something that really concerns me, and I addressed it directly to this association within the past two or three days before we left to come up here. And that is that there has been a very mysterious federal order issued against Bobby Reconosciuto that indicates that she has abducted her children.
That, by the way, is Michael Reconosciuto's wife.
Correct.
Okay.
And she has three children by a former marriage, and she has one child with Michael. And there are flyers put out by the National Association for Missing and Abused Children, which has pictures of Bobby Reconosciuto and each of her children. Now, the pictures of the children were taken from school pictures in a raid of her home. And they were paid for by Bobby because she was supporting the children at the time. She was raising the children. And when these flyers come out, most of you have received a postcard with a child saying missing. They come out from an entity called the National Association for Missing and Abused Children. When I got thinking about this, after I called up the agency, they faxed me the flyers, and I asked them how they check to determine the validity of the information upon which they based the flyer. And I was a little appalled. They gave me a federal warrant, and I started doing my homework on the federal warrant. And the dates don't jive. The police were at Bobby's door, from Oregon State Police, were at Bobby's door and never took the children because there was no outstanding warrant at the time. The warrant came later.
Now, the warrant was for who?
For Bobby Reconosciuto.
For having abused her children, supposedly?
Well, it was unclear. A non-custodial parent in possession of the children. But the custody warrants and the information that I have in my files, including doctor's reports, clearly show that Bobby Reconosciuto had been abused during her pregnancy with Michael's child and was neither informed nor able to attend the hearings that took place that was going to result in her ex-husband being granted custody of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the doctor's reports. If anyone cares to see them, I'll be glad to supply them. But my point is, more importantly, is that association has a direct conflict of interest because it's funded by the Justice Department. When I asked the gentleman in charge there, who funds you, he hemmed and hawed and finally came up with the United States Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a Justice Department who is in full knowledge of the seriousness of the situation involving the Alvarez murders. You have a Justice Department who has, I assume, if they're doing their job, been in touch with the Riverside DA's office. And if they were in touch with Riverside DA, Jean Gilbert, then they know that the party who testified against Bobby Reconosciuto in the custody hearing is also considered a suspect in the triple executions of Fred Alvarez.
So the person who testified against Bobby and this warrant basically was alleging that she had improper custody of her three children by a previous marriage. And the person who testified against her was also the individual who... Now, this wasn't Jimmy Hughes, was it?
No.
But this is somebody who had information about the Alvarez killing as well.
That's right.
Now, the Justice Department, of course, is the main culprit in the pirating of the Promise software developed by Inslaw. The Justice Department is also... What is the name of the organization for missing and abused children?
It's my understanding it's the National Association for Missing and Abused Children.
And that is
based in Washington, D.C.
Okay, and that is funded by the Justice Department.
In part funded by the United States Justice Department.
And, of course, that is the organization which has been behind or involved with this warrant to take Bobby Reconosciuto's children away from her.
That's correct. They've been circulating her pictures and the children's pictures based upon this so-called federal warrant. Now, next week, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be taking a very close look at that federal warrant and the judge that issued it, and why, if he issued it, he did not order the Oregon State Police to take the children from her at the time that her home was last invaded.
And this, in your opinion, obviously, would seem to be a yet another form of retaliation against the Reconosciutos for Michaels having blown the whistle on Inslaw.
Yes, I think Michael probably and Bobby also will endure far more troubles before he's able to go home to Mama, if that ever happens.
Now, what is the status of Michael Reconosciuto's health? Because you mentioned that he had a breathing machine. He suffers from a disorder called sleep apnea, and that he has a machine to help him keep breathing when he's asleep, and the prison authorities have denied him that machine. What is the status of that as of this time?
The prison authorities continue to deny him access to the machine. Sometimes when he's in a cell with a partner, the partner will have to literally roll him off the bunk onto the floor to wake him up. And this is a condition, it's my understanding, that is prevalent in short men with thick necks, and it can be very serious, very much akin to sudden infant death, where you have to have your breathing triggered by a mechanism. Now, the Pierce County Jail full well knows this because I have written 3 letters to them requesting that he be allowed to have the machine, or at least to have a physician verify the sleep apnea and that they monitor their prisoner accordingly.
And you mentioned in an earlier talk that they basically said, we don't want our business being minded by some woman from California, as I recall.
Yes. Maybe I'll move to Washington and see what I can do up there.
I suspect that probably won't affect the situation that much. It sounds to me like they do not want Michael Reconosciuto to have that machine.
Well, lately it's been rather interesting, though. I will say this for the Pierce County Jail. I think that there is a move afoot to, if something does happen to Michael, to make certain that it's apparent that they are not responsible. There's, as you said, the rats are leaving the ship. And I think that's what's happening up in Pierce County, because it's getting pretty obvious in the national media that Michael Reconosciuto and his declaration and his continued outspokenness has a direct relationship to the number of deaths that we're seeing on a regular basis. When you can tie one man and one declaration and what he is saying directly into 8 obituaries, I'm surprised that there has not been outrage in the national media before this.
Yeah, the Casolaro case does, to a certain extent anyway, seem to have shaken out. There seems to be a fair amount of fallout. Usually when you get one of these national security assassinations, there is almost no coverage of it other than beyond the surface story. I am seeing a lot of hit pieces being done on Daniel, no pun intended, being done on him after his death, indicating that drinking and despondency may have been underlying the alleged suicide. Yet at the same time, when you have people like Jack Anderson and Kilpatrick coming out, it does indicate that to me anyway, that this has caused more alarm than a lot of these assassinations do.
Of those two pieces, and I almost hate to do this, but of those two pieces, I would really like to compliment Mr. Kirkpatrick, because he at least called for a full FBI investigation, and if there's any FBI out there still awake and breathing, it would be nice if they began doing their job. Because when I called them in San Francisco and asked for an investigation into the related denial of civil liberties, the very basis of which is life, they said they weren't interested.
The interesting thing is that the Attorney General, the fellow who replaced Thornburg, and Thornburg was not cooperating with Congress and the House Judiciary Committee in its investigation of Inslaw. In fact, he was withholding documents. The fellow who has replaced him, a fellow named William P. Barr, worked for the CIA from 1973 to 1977, and it should be noted that Director of Central Intelligence in 76 and 77 was George Bush, now, of course, President of the United States, and an individual who stands to get tarred pretty thoroughly if the various tentacles of the octopus can ever be unraveled.
Well, Mr. Bush, I think, has the same problems, more or less, that Mr. Gorby does. I think the same arrangements and the same deals were struck. And I think they both full well know that while they might have international dealings under control, they certainly do not have control over the discontent within their own nations. And all you have to do to know that in America is to pick up the newspaper. The Sacramento Bee had an extensive article today about how Americans look with chagrin upon the charade that they call their government now. There does not seem to be any accountability from those people we elect to serve, other than to make sure they get their own raise. And we seem to be so satiated with bad performance and outright crookedness in government that we sit back and say, well, it's just one more crook.
I was going to say, the American people elected both Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan twice, which does not speak well for their political acumen.
Well, maybe we won't make that mistake with Mr. Bush.
Yeah, let's hope so. One of the reasons why I have been focusing as much as I have on the various tentacles of the octopus is that it is my hope that if some of these scandals, October Surprise in particular, can be unraveled, we can knock George Bush out. Although, I think potentially at least the Inslaw case, because the House Judiciary Committee can impeach, whereas the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which is going to be looking into October Surprise, cannot. But if a connection can be made between October Surprise and Inslaw, and there certainly does appear to be one, well, who knows? We might be able to get George Bush out even before 1992. Although I think that's unlikely.
Well, I think it's unlikely unless there's a hue and cry, and maybe the hue and cry has to come from each mother and father who loses a child over this. I mean, that's the bottom line. I've spoken with Anthony Casolaro and Danny's brother, and I've spoken with Mr. Sandorf, and we don't raise children in this country to serve their country, to lose their life, because somebody doesn't want them to speak out in the interest of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I should let you go with that note, Dave.
Okay. If there's anything else you'd like to fill me or fill the audience in on, please feel free to do so. We're not pressed for time, but that I wanted to find out what had developed since last week. And if those are the developments as you see them and would like to fill us in on them, then we can go ahead and move along.
I will say one more thing. And that is, there apparently was another body found at Dulles Airport, a chief warrant officer, and we're not able to at this time to give you any information because the airport authorities are not giving us any information. This apparent murder occurred 2 to 3 months after that of Mr. Sandorf, and I learned first about it from Bill Turner, and then Mr. Sandorf had been contacted from two or three people who let him know that there had been a murder after that of his son. And there will be two major television shows in the month of September doing follow-ups on Danny's death, and I urge your listeners to watch them.
Can you tell us which programs those will be?
I believe that'll be Inside Edition and out of Sacramento, the West.
Okay, now Inside Edition did have a piece this past Monday. About the Casolaro case, and it also featured you in this particular segment.
I'll try not to make that mistake again, but the next piece that they're doing, I believe, will deal with the related deaths to Danny's, the deaths of his sources.
Okay. All righty.
Thank you for having me on again, Dave.
Okay, so just to clarify the last piece of information, there does appear to have been another murder, and this was a body of a U.S. Army warrant officer found at Dulles Airport?
That's correct.
The
latter part of February, the early part of March, is the best we can determine at this time.
Interesting. Well, it's almost like, you know, a rock and roll radio show, because the phrase, the hits just keep on coming, applies to this case as well.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Virginia, and hopefully you will, I trust, keep us posted about future developments, and be aware that this broadcast will always be open to you as a vehicle for doing that.
I thank you, and thank you, listeners.
Okay. Thank you, Virginia.
Bye-bye.
And good night.
And that concludes the conversation with Virginia McCullough, the update for the Joseph Daniel Casolaro killing. And by the way, people who would like to hear the previous conversations with Virginia McCullough, and people who would like to hear about the death of Joseph Daniel Casolaro, some of the articles about that, you can contact Archives on Audio and ask for an archive show called For Whom the Bell Tolls, The Killing of Joseph Daniel Casolaro. And this program will be on permanent file with Archives on Audio.